Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome to 90 Day Fiancé WTF Podcast, a weekly hangout to talk about what the fuck we all just watch on TLC's 90 Day Fiancé. I am Nadia, and with me is my co-host, Lon.
Hey, what's up, Nadia?
What's up, Lon?
How's it going?
Just like the last episode of 90 Day Fiancé. Very meh. Yeah. Well, I think also because I pretty much fast forwarded the parts on Angela and Big Ed.
Yeah. I am guilty though of watching the final scene
of
Big Ed. Yeah.
Yeah. Where he's supposed to show Liz how to take.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm guilty. I listen, but of course I'm like, whatever, dude, this is a toxic relationship and it's probably fake anyway.
Yeah.
I do have to say, now that you're talking about Big Ed, and I'm sorry, listeners, but I love that Lou finally talked shit about Angela. Lou, her lawyer.
Oh, I
remember
don't know.
Remember Lou? She always like goes to his law firm and just walks in and like, Lou.
Okay. Yeah.
We got to talk about the visa. This time around, when they did a one-on-one interview with Lou, he actually said, like, I don't really care about her personal life. I wish you would just stop talking about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, Lou. Yes.
Yeah. I must fast forward through that because I don't.
Yeah. Do you still fast forward Sumit and Jenny?
I've watched it, but I may end up fast forwarding.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
It seems like they apologize to each other.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm with Sumit on this. He even took the time to like patch things up and apologize. I don't really know if he needed to apologize though.
I didn't think so.
Like, it's natural, I think, if your parents get up and storm off to go, hey,
after
let's
them.
Squash this. Yeah, to get up and go, like,
yeah.
Come on, like, grow up, Jenny. You know, this is what kind of frustrates me. I understand she's hurt about the situation and stuff, but she's like, you went after your parents. What? Those are his fucking parents.
Exactly.
I'm just like, you know what? This is dumb. Like, yeah. This is so dumb.
Just when you think Jenny needs to stop growing, like she has a lot of growing up to do.
Yeah.
Like we all thought that she's more mature than that, right? Because going after your parents, it's probably normal and natural. She shouldn't read between the lines there. Like she shouldn't read into it. Just because he chased after his mom doesn't mean that he will stop loving her or
he
chose his mom over her or something. Like he just wanted to console his mom. He just wanted a second chance. So yeah, I don't think any of us saw anything wrong with that except Jenny.
Yeah. She can be really, really selfish.
Yeah, and violent, it seems.
Yeah. But I'm glad they made up.
Yeah, of course they did. I feel bad during that scene where Sumit said that, hey, I don't have anyone anymore. You're the only one. So I need you to support me. That kind of tugged at my heart a little bit because if this is all true, like he literally doesn't have any family support anymore.
Yeah.
And this is in his hometown. He doesn't have family support.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think
let that sink in.
This episode, I think he finally said or acknowledged that it has to be one or the other. I forget how he phrased it, but he knew that, like, it's either, he had to choose a side. Like, it was either one or the other, and you can't have both in this situation.
That's maturity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least that's well handled, I would say.
Moving on?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yes. No, no, no. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Well, moving on to Shahida and Bilal. I know we tweeted something about Bilal, and I'm 100% behind that tweet. How dare him make Shahida feel guilty about all this? Like, he should have had her back.
Yeah. So how I feel this all went down is I think he knows that he was inadequate as a husband in that situation, but it's never his fault. Never his fault. It's not in him to say, I should have stood up for you. Mm. Or it's not in him to acknowledge the responsibility that he had in perhaps controlling that situation.
Yeah.
So rather than own up to that, it's about how she handled that situation and that she shouldn't have let things get out of hand. And that it was up to her to, like, control her emotions. And I'm behind that. I'm behind what he said when he said, you shouldn't allow or let somebody else
dictate
how you act. I get that. But the way he went about it was making it her fault when it was his shortcomings. You know what I mean? And him and his ex-wife as well. But he placed it on her and he made her feel guilty about it to the point where she's like, I think she said, if you want me to apologize, I'm going to apologize. I'm just like, no. And it just so wasn't cool. And he's just there with his shoulders crossed, eating the breakfast that she prepared for him. Like, I fucking hate this guy. Hate's a strong word, but he gets worse every episode.
I get this feeling that he makes Shahida walk on eggshells around him.
Yep.
Because you can tell, right? She had to prepare breakfast for him in order to start the conversation. And you can just tell that she was just uncomfortable and she knew that he's mad at her. And I didn't appreciate how he guilt tripped her like that. Like you said, because of his shortcomings. And I get that in an argument, you should always take the high road, right? But as her husband, I think I mentioned this during the last episode too. Like, he should have refereed the whole thing better. He should have said, like, hey, Shahida, back off. Or Shahida's, like, calm down. Like, he should have said something, because I just felt like he just let that get out of hand.
Right.
And praying about it or praying over it, to me, I think, while it's a nice gesture, at that moment, didn't help the situation.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, well. Moving on?
Moving on.
I feel like there's a lot to say about Kimberly and Usman.
Really?
Maybe not. I guess because I was cringing all the way when I was watching their scenes. It just felt like Usman is an opportunist.
Yes.
So is Kimberly.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
They're both maybe meant for each other. They're both opportunists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For this, I can't even watch the scenes that he's in without seeing how big of an opportunist he is. Every time he's on there, it really is about his music. The way I see it, it's about his music and getting and securing the bag, getting this green card. I don't really think he likes Kimberly like that. I don't. I really genuinely don't. And I feel bad because she's totally tripping about him. Like, she comes off so desperate. Like, that car scene was it was so cringy to me. I couldn't. I was just like, this is no. And then she's dancing and singing his lyrics.
I know. And then her son's like made to listen to the song. And then like, afterwards, he's like, actually, that's not bad.
I just think too, he's being nice. But I mean, and it's catchy.
It is.
It's catchy. So I think there was some truth to that. I think he was like, all right, it's catchy. It's a catchy tune, you know? But dude, that must have been a long ass car ride. Just, you got to listen to this one. I just been like, yes, mom. Okay. Let's listen to your boyfriend's music. Like, I just didn't like it. Yeah. She has some nerve, though, I think.
Which part?
So for her to think that what she says goes in terms of how this wife thing is gonna pan out, mm-hmm. that hers is the final say, that, mm-hmm. okay, yeah, you can get married, but guess what? It's going to be like this. I think it's definitely a topic they need to talk about. And if you're really going to say, oh, I respect his religion and I respect his culture and I respect the way they do things, then you can't just all of a sudden go, I'm an American and we don't do it like that. I'm not going to be a sister wife. I'm just like, you have some fucking nerve, because you were over here saying all this shit about respecting his culture, his religion, and you're going to do the second wife thing. And now this episode, you're like, well, I'm American, honey, and I don't get down like that. I'm just like, the fuck? Who do you think you are?
Yeah.
Like, really? And you could see it in Usman's face. Like, wait, no, wait. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? And really, she just has some nerve. Yeah, they're both opportunists and they're perfect for each other. But at the same time, I'm like, this isn't the relationship for you.
Yeah,
I don't think so. And at that point, I was encouraging Usman to leave. I was like, man, just fucking leave her.
Yeah.
But, you know, he has to secure the bag.
Man, of all people, through women like baby girl Lisa and now Kimbali, why?
Why?
Why? Is that his type? I mean, okay, you know, not judgy, but like, I'm judging.
It's his type. It's his type to target.
Target,
and
right.
That's why I can't watch his scenes. I can watch them. What I'm saying is that's why I can't watch his scenes and take him seriously. Take him as if he wants to be in this relationship, because we have seen the women that he talks to and that he's attracted to when he's mm-hmm. not talking to BGL and to Kimbali.
Yeah.
And they look nothing like these American women.
Yeah.
It's so calculated and it's targeted. He has a type when it comes to American women. Mm-hmm. And that's where I see it as completely opportunistic. That's why I'm looking at it like, dude, this isn't for real. This isn't for real. Yeah.
This ain't you. So Kimbali is or was a military vet.
Right.
Do you think she's a paratrooper? Because she mentioned something about jumping out of planes like 72 times or something. Did you catch that?
I do vaguely remember it. If she did that, I would think so. I mean, I haven't jumped out of planes myself, and I don't know how many different roles in the military do that. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was just paratrooping, like maybe that branch of the military or something, because she said she jumped out of planes a lot of times.
Yeah.
Well, mad respect. I guess she has no fear. But the other thing I was going to ask you, and that goes back to the point that you were making about her not wanting to be a sister wife. But then she also calls herself the first wife. Isn't that part of being a sister wife? To actually assign yourself like a label or like a designation, like first wife, second wife, third wife.
I see it as she thinks that it's just her pulling rank and that she gets to dictate how the second wife will live. Like, oh, well, because I'm the first wife, I have say over this person's life. I get to tell her to live in a completely other country with their kid, and I want nothing to do with her. She is pulling rank here. And I don't know. I don't know the culture. I don't know how that works. But I can totally see that that's how she believes that it runs, is that because I'm the first, everything has to go through me. Mm-hmm. And all these other wives or whatever that you're going to have, they don't come near me at all.
Yeah. Well.
We'll see about
that. We'll see about that. Yeah. All right. Last couple, well, you know, like we mentioned before, we're not going to cover Big Ed and Angela. So this will be the last couple that we're going to talk about. Yara and Jovi, in this time around, they have Miss Gwen on this episode. So let me ask you, Lon, is it reasonable for Yara to expect Miss Gwen to be like a quote-unquote Ukrainian grandma?
I think it was just a misconception.
Okay, explain.
So. And Yara explained it to Gwen pretty good. Like, you know, growing up in her country, her mom was a certain way with taking care of children. And, you know, she just forgot that maybe that's not how every person does it. So her expectations coming to America that, oh, everything's just kind of how my mom did it. And it wasn't. I think she told Gwen that, like, oh, you know, my mom is like this and she does this. And, you know, she misperceived the entire thing. And because of that, her expectations were set. So I don't want to say that it was fair to have that expectation. I just think it was a misconception or a misperception of what this nannying thing was about or what this babysitting thing was about. And like, because of it, her expectations were wrong or whatever.
Yeah, like just because your mom wants to take care of kids doesn't mean that other people's mom wants to do the same. I think I'm with Miss Gwen because I'm like, that's fair. She said, like, I would love to spend time with my grandkid, but I'm not y'all's nanny.
Nobody's right? nanny.
Yeah, nobody's nanny, which I think makes sense because, yeah, I mean, unless you have some sort of arrangement with her, you know, I think Miss Gwen enjoys her free time. And I think my mother-in-law is the same too. Like, she has grandkids and sometimes she too express her frustration. Like, I'm not a daycare. You cannot just drop your kids, you know, at my house hoping that I'll take care of them while my sister-in-law and her husband jets off somewhere.
Right.
And I get it. Sometimes you made that decision because you trust your own family as opposed to getting an au pair or you're getting your own nanny. But sometimes you have to consider, like, the grandparents are living their twilight years and maybe they don't want to take care of kids. You know, and I think that's their prerogative. That's fair.
And what was it? We mentioned it last episode. So the 3-hour drive one way or something like that?
Miss Gwen lives all the way out in the bayou.
Yeah.
And they're closer to the city. They're like in one of the suburbs closer to downtown New Orleans.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why it's like 3 hours drive. And yeah, that's not reasonable to make a
6-hour round trip every single time to come out and see him.
Yeah.
And like, it's not like she's going to pack her bags and stay for a week. Like, we've seen that her and Yara bump heads a lot, you know, when they're together. So it's, I also wouldn't want to stay there. Are you going to stay the night? No, no. I'll make this 3-hour trip back home. we don't really get along like that, but I want to see my grandkid. I'll come and I'll help out for a day, maybe two at most, but I'm not packing my bags for a week to stick around here and we end up hating each other by the time I leave. So yeah, Yara and Jovi, they need to figure it out. I get it that they trust his mom, but like, nah, y'all got to figure something out.
Yeah, I didn't really appreciate the fact that Jovi yelled at his mom for not being supportive to Yara. Mm-hmm. But had he heard his mom out, I think he would have understood why Miss Gwen didn't want to be Myla's nanny all the time. You know, it's unreasonable.
He comes off as spoiled sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, the only child, right?
I think. Yeah. There's times when he talks to his mom a certain way, it's like, dude, have you always been talking like this? Like, it's always like he got what he wanted and she lets him slide with certain things.
Yeah.
So even when he was like, well, yeah, when I'm gone, you need to be there and stuff. I'm like, what? No, she doesn't.
He is like the only, well, unless there's some sibling that we haven't met, but does he have a sibling? I'm trying to think.
I don't think so. If he does, I don't remember.
Yeah, he might be the only son. So maybe that's why he gets away with shit.
Yeah.
So the other thing that obviously is the elephant in the room that we should at least highlight is the fact that this is the beginning of the war that's happening right now in Ukraine. And I think we saw Yara talking to her mom to inform her that she just got her green card and will be going for the green card interview. And then I think we found out that her mom is actually not in Ukraine, but is in Prague, Czech Republic, I believe. And then I think I heard something about Yara saying that she wants to go home. But Miss Gwen was like, maybe you shouldn't, because it sounds like things are getting rough over there. So yeah, Lon, anything you want to cover there?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see how this plays out. And I'm curious how this plays out, because while it was happening, I remember seeing clips of her on social media where she was crying. She was really worried. I don't have really much to say other than that I'm interested to see how it plays out, how they're going to play it out on the show. And I do hope her mom was okay. And it sounds like her mom gave her a choice, right? Like, she said something like, do you want to meet up in Prague or in the Ukraine? And she said, I want to visit home. Yeah, like, I don't think that's... We'll see. We'll see how that works out. I don't think she could, but I understand wanting to go home. Yeah. And, you know, I've never been in this position. So that's also kind of why I'm interested. I've never been in this position where, oh, you should come back home. Well, you can't, because shit's really fucked up right now. So That's going to be an interesting thing to see. And I'm not saying this because I want to be entertained. I'm curious. I'm legit curious.
Yeah.
I just want to see how it plays out.
It's a very grim reality for a lot of Ukrainians. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to highlight is the fact that when Yara was trying to explain how she's so confused and shocked at how there's still going to be a war, and she said, we progress from monkey. Yeah, it's 2022 and we progress from monkey. And I was like, oh, Yara. That's so cute. Yeah. Progress from monkey. I mean, it's true, but also what a way to explain it. But yeah, very endearing right there.
I love their scenes, though. Again, this wasn't probably my favorite segment from the whole series, but it still had these moments where Yara still comes off as very young and mm-hmm. very playful, you know, like when she was happy about getting the immigration papers and stuff. And, you know, she looks at him and she was like, you know, what are they going to ask me then? Like, my favorite color? What's my favorite color? You know, and he's like, pink? It's beige, you know. There's these little moments, yeah, right, that you don't see with the older kind of couples and stuff like that. And like, these are moments I like to see. It goes back to the whole 90 day things, right? Like, mm-hmm. we're seeing this, like, well, okay, well, if they're going to ask me these things, what the fuck's my favorite color then? And he's like, pink. Like, no, it's beige. I get all this. They're sitting on a beige sofa. I get all these beige things. So for me, they're one of my favorite couples to watch because they go through real shit. I get it. Even the previous time when she was going out with her friends and he's like, I'll just stay at home. That's totally a young thing. What a young couple would go through. And
Yep.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful for them. Really am.
Same here. So this is a filler episode, but even though it is a filler episode, do we have a WTF moment?
It was no question for me. WTF was how Bilal was acting. I didn't like it. I was kind of yelling at the TV because I just feel so bad for Shaida. This is how she has to live. And when you said walking on eggshells, I felt that. I felt that too.
She's scared.
Yeah, I've been feeling this for a while, actually. During the tell-all, there was just a certain energy and a certain vibe between them during the tell-all when she was speaking. Mm-hmm. It felt like she was finally able to say some shit.
Yeah.
Because they weren't at home.
Yeah.
And because people were around and there's power in numbers. And even then, you know, that's why he was quiet. That's why he couldn't say shit, because shit's different at home. And then once they get home, you know, she's back to walking on eggshells. It's back to him being the master of the house. And you better watch what you fucking say, because you don't got cameras. You don't got the strength in numbers for people here to back you up. This episode, she's super like subservient and bringing him food and telling him, I'll apologize to her if you want me to. And it's just like, no, like, you don't owe her that. Yeah. And it just making her feel guilty for how things went down. And like I said, I agree with what he said. Don't let anyone dictate your actions. That could have been empowering. That could have been like, hey, you know, she got under your skin. Don't let that happen. It could have been more encouraging. Like, I could see that. I could see myself giving someone that kind of encouragement. Don't let her get under your skin. Don't ever let anyone impact you that way or dictate how you're going to act. It's not worth it. It could have came off like that, and mm-hmm. it didn't. It was totally coming off as, you fucked up. You fucked up because you let her do that. And that's why that whole scene was messy, because of you. Because you let that's how it was coming off. And I'm just how dare you, bro?
He's very quick to be critical. I feel like he's so quick to judge and quick to point out, okay, this is your flaw. And
it's always about that.
Yeah.
Making her look like that on camera. I'm already getting irked about it.
Like, I'm going to quote you, Lon. That's really small pee-pee energy, because men who are very insecure, and I mean, maybe not just men, right? Like, anyone who's insecure and they have a partner that's great, they try to control them by pointing out their flaws. And whenever something happens, like in this case, this incident, they're so quick to judge and so quick to point out, like, yeah, you done fucked up.
You should be raising them up.
Uplifting these people and saying, you know what, we could do better next time, but she shouldn't have done that, or something like that. Just something encouraging would go a long way, I feel.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the narcissism kicking in, where he's like, here's an opportunity to place myself just above her again and to lower her again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
Because he sees himself as the alpha of the family, and he wants to be the one that has the final say. Or he's supposed to be the guide here. So Bilal doing Bilal things.
Bilal doing Bilal things. What's your WTF moment?
My WTF moment is something we briefly talked about. It's not really a WTF, but I feel like it's a win, because I'm glad that Angela's lawyer finally threw her bullshit.
Yeah.
Actually admitted that he doesn't give a shit about her personal life, because she makes it a point to make it all about her whenever she goes to his office. And I know I don't want to go too much deeper into this, but I'm just glad that Lou finally has a backbone. He grew one suddenly, and
it's a good WTF.
Yeah. And started to like say, well, I don't really give a shit about your personal life. And he didn't say it to her face, but he admitted it to the cameras. And I thought that was a good start.
She does this to everyone too.
Totally.
She did it to the surgeons. Yoga,
the yoga instructor, like, I get it. TLC probably prompted that conversation. Like, she went there, you know, obviously to promote the store and the yoga practice. But then the yoga instructor has to have something to say, right? To make it seem like natural. They're having a natural conversation.
See, I fast forwarded through that.
I forgot what they talked about, but I know that the instructor was forced to ask Angela, like, hey, why are you looking so sad? Like, what's on your mind? And Angela like started to pile on all the Michael bullshit. And I'm like, God, okay, that's when I kind of fast forwarded.
Not today.
not ever. All right. We'll take a pause and return after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, welcome back, listeners. We are here still to talk about Hot D.
The hottest D.
Yeah, the hottest D on HBO, actually. Episode 4, right, Lon?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, Lon, would you like to do the honor of summarizing or talking about this episode?
Yeah, so for me, this was kind of another power play with Damon. The way he takes Rhaenyra away from the castle, it's all planned, it's all calculated. I kind of sensed it from the beginning. There's no way he's just going to be friendly with her and stuff like that. I knew that there was the end goal, which was, as it plays out, to kind of ruin her reputation and to set him up for the throne.
Oh wow, I didn't see it that way.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I'm glad you're providing this perspective, because I didn't see it that way. But it's good. This is like really refreshing to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah. So, okay, let me take it all the way from the beginning. So the way I see it, what happened at the Stepstones, that brings him back in good graces and sets him up as a hero, you know, and they crowned me the king of the
Narrow Sea.
Yeah, exactly. But to respect his brother's title, you know, he kneels and stuff. Damon's really smart. All of this is setting the stage for him to ascend the throne. So that part, succeeding in the Stepstones, and then what happens with Rhaenyra, and ultimately it ends up with a knife to his throat. This is everybody trying to aim at the throne at this point. Yeah. But I think he tells his brother, like, you would have my daughter sullied just so you could fucking, you know, get my crown or whatever.
Yeah.
And I kind of saw that playing out when it was happening. I was like, I don't think he was interested in Rhaenyra like that. Should we just go get into it sexually?
Yeah.
Let me know how you felt about it. But to me, it was first bringing her to the play and having her see, you know what? People don't really like you, and this is important. Kind of planting the seed. You're going to need me to help you. It wasn't explicit. It was implied.
Yeah.
You're not going to make this on your own, right? He was planting the seed with her, and then taking her around town, and especially once they got into the brothel, I was like, dude, if you see, as soon as they enter, he removes her disguise. he Supermans her, right? He takes off the glasses or whatever, right? Or not glasses, I'm being figured.
Guys, yep.
Yeah, the guys, right? So that people will recognize her. And off the bat, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they had sex or not. That's moot. The fact that she's in the brothel already is going to make people talk. So mm-hmm. right when he did that, I was already like, yeah, he just wants people to talk and to report back to the king. Hey, you know what? She was in a brothel.
Whorehouse. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting people to see that both of them were together was icing on the cake. But at the very fact that she stepped in there, people would already start whispering. Yeah. So
I think you summarized that really well. For some reason, I didn't see it that way. I saw him as doing her a favor and giving her an outsider's point of view of what people think, what the common folks think about the Targaryens and the royal family, I guess. And that's why he took her to the play and say like, hey, this is what people actually thought about you. But I never thought of that other subtext of like, well, they don't like you and you need me. I didn't think about that. I didn't think that deeply or that far.
It was well-intentioned. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It comes across as well-intentioned. So I thought that whole scene where he asked her to put on the plain clothes and come out to the city, that was just him saying that, hey, there's a party life outside of the Red Keep, or rather within the Red Keep or something.
Let's go hang out. You're a prisoner in here, which was another theme. So if I'm going to summarize some themes, there's also themes, right?
And
the free spirit and the prisoner and sex as duty versus sex as pleasure. So there are themes. You're totally right about that. I totally agree.
I didn't see it as him trying to tarnish her reputation for some reason. I see him doing this as a favor in terms of like, hey, there's life outside the royal walls.
Live a little bit.
Yeah, you can be yourself. And of course, trying to get her to learn what pleasure is. And that's why he took her to this whorehouse. And I thought him making a move, that was kind of due. Because I think that, like you and I talked about how there's always tension.
There's that tension there.
Sexual tension between them. Like they have respect for each other. But I also think that there's more. And maybe he did think that he could impregnate her so that he will ascend the throne with her. And because he's a male, he will automatically be a king and she'll be the queen, you know? So yeah, I never thought of it as, okay, this is stage and Daemon wants to piss Viserys off.
Yeah. I definitely think he tried because if he did have sex and the seeds in there, that would have been a home run in more ways than one, right?
He regretted it midway. I think when he was about to get it on with her. And then I think he caught himself and he's like, no, I cannot do this to my own niece.
Did you watch the end, the inside the episode?
Yeah, I did. Which part?
They said he couldn't get it up.
Right. I thought that was implied.
I didn't catch that. I was like, to me, it looked like he got frustrated. To me, it was like what you said. He was like, I can't do this. He got frustrated and he left. Mm-hmm. But then like two of the cast members said, he was impotent or he couldn't get it up or something. I was like, is that the only thing that like stopped him? But yeah.
I think it's the guilt too. Like he suddenly caught himself and he's like, no, I cannot do this to my own niece. What do you think about the king stripping Otto Hightower of?
I loved it.
Right?
I loved it, but it wouldn't have happened had Rhaenyra not pushed him. So Rhaenyra was like, okay, like I fucked up. But you have to know that there's a guy that's really close to you and you're just trusting really, really was like, I'll do what you want me to do. But you have to know that you trust Otto way too much.
Yeah.
You know,
and like how dare he put a spy on me?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like I think she finally nudged him and said, look, this, you got to keep a close eye on this guy because he's doing shady shit, you know? And his daughter is already the queen, your wife, bearing heirs for you. And he's definitely going after your crown. So we got to keep him in check. So while I compromise to marry Sir Lenor Valerian, you have to do your part. And I think it was implied, right? So
small note here. Uncle, not okay. Cousin's fine, though. How dare you?
Dude,
how dare you? How dare you have sex with your uncle? Now go marry your cousin.
Yeah, go marry your cousin.
I was like,
okay. I know. That's the punchline of that episode. Like, uncle, not okay. Cousin?
Cousin, I'm forcing you. This has to happen.
It's like that Drake meme, right? The Hotline Bling. Like, like was it? Like, uncle?
Yeah.
Cousin?
Yeah. So I would be remiss to not mention Alicent. I think obviously the Game of Thrones portion of it was kind of the strong themes here, Otto and Damon with their plotting. But I think too, Alicent's story in all this, I don't want it to get overlooked. So, you know, we see her kind of saying, you know, I don't have a lot of friends here. It's lonely. And then we see her sleeping in her own bed. And the only time she's really with her husband is when he calls her to have sex, which is whack, you know? And I think too, she really wants to have his company other than just to be used. Mm-hmm. Because like, I like when, you know, she tells the servants to leave and she's trying to help bathe him. And he's
she's doing her duty.
Right.
As her wife. I think she's just doing the part that her father told her to do. But I don't think she's enjoying it.
She's very much a prisoner. And again, I don't want her story to be overlooked. I felt bad when she was, I don't have a lot of friends here and you're my friend, you know, and she's trying to repair this relationship. Yeah. And as they're working towards repairing it, this shit happens and the allegations, right? And I heard what my dad said and now they're in conflict again. And she's like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah. You're right. I feel like the show does a good job of making her look like an opportunist, but she's also well-intentioned. So you kind of want to hate her, but then you don't. I don't know about you, but I'm on Rhaenyra's side, obviously, right? Because the show sort of centers around her. And of course, if she's the protagonist, then who's the antagonist? And that's where Alicent comes in, because I think from the preview, we see that at some point, Alicent points a knife at Rhaenyra and... I mean, that's on the trailer, one of the earlier previews, I would say. So I think at some point they'll get into some sort of conflict. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Alicent might take Rhaenyra's side. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
I just think that what the stripping of Otto as the hand of the king will start a chain of event where Otto will try to get back at the king by insisting that Alicent insists that Aegon becomes the rightful heir to the throne.
Yeah, that scene in the trailer where he's like, prepare Aegon for the throne or something like that. For me, I have more of a sympathetic view of Alicent. I do think that there's going to be conflict between her and Rhaenyra, definitely. But I see her more as a victim of circumstance. I see her as she is Rhaenyra's friend and her father's forced her to do it. And when she was yelling at Rhaenyra, and Rhaenyra was like, are you accusing me of shit? And she's like, I'm trying to help you. Like she was saying, there's people that are trying to make you not the heir to the throne. I'm trying to make sure your reputation is fucking clean. Like, what are you doing? It's like she's trapped and she's being pulled in all these different directions.
Right.
It's because she got fucking stuck there. And that's how I see it. She's trying to follow her father's directions. She's trying to be a loyal wife to the king, but also she wants to be Rhaenyra's friend.
Yeah.
And she's being, you know, pulled in all these different directions. So I kind of just see her as that. And I'm just like, it's a tough spot to be in. But for she's the queen, you know, and I forget how it was phrased, but when they were talking, I forget how the conversation went. She has all the power, but like, it's still a shitty place to be in, despite how powerful she is. And I think Rhaenyra said something like, you know, we could trade places, or not everyone wants to like just be in the castle and birth heirs or something.
She meant it
for herself.
Yeah. But Alicent felt that, obviously.
Yeah. And she's like, that's what she does. Yeah.
She's
like,
the castle birthing. She caught herself kids. Like, yeah.
Sorry.
And Viserys is so gross. Like, he has all these scabs on him, and for him to just go at her and like, ugh.
I was just like, man, skin falling off and everything. He's just
Anyway, before we get too carried away, I think so far this has been a really great show and I cannot wait for this upcoming episode. I think, like you said, we see Otto trying to get back at the king through his own grandson. And I'm still curious to know what Miss Sarah's character is. You know, like they call her the white worm. Some people say that she's the...
Oh,
the
that's the white worm.
Yeah. Some people say she's the new little finger.
Okay.
Yeah.
I heard that term and I didn't know who they were speaking about.
So she's like the town's know-it-all. Like she's the informant.
Mm.
So maybe she knew some secret and...
She's the one with the little birdies.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. Exactly. Because remember the spy that reported to Otto about the fact that he saw Rhaenyra at the whorehouse?
Mm-hmm.
That same spy came to Whiteworm as well, to Miserys. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And I might be butchering people's name here, but I'm still trying to get the pronunciation right.
Do you think anything is going to come back to Sir Criston Cole for the incident? Do you think there's anything more to that? Like, will a relationship develop? Will he be perhaps maybe penalized in the future if the secret ever gets out? Or do you think this was a one and done? It was not one night stand and that's all we're going to see?
I like to think that Rhaenyra does have genuine feelings for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometime down the road, she will let him down and he will feel resentment towards her.
Mm.
And he would side with Alison.
Mm.
So that's my prediction.
Mm. It's a good one. Lots of conflict right there.
Exactly. That's going to be season two.
Oh, man, that would hurt. That would be painful.
Yeah.
I would feel some type of way that she's marrying Laenor. If I were him. But, you know, his duty is to the realm and
yeah,
to her majesty.
And I think he would understand why, too. That's why I can't wait to see this next episode. You know, just to see how he feels about her moving on from him.
Right.
All right, Lon. I think that's all for this week's coverage of Hot D.
Mm.
Any last words to our listeners?
That was my final thing, really, was where does Sir Criston Cole character going to go from here? And you also touched up on Miseria. We only get, 2 minutes of her at a time. It's just like, can we give her some more time here? Yeah. I want to see what this is about. And I know we're only 4 episodes in, but how many episodes are we going to get? 8? We're pretty much halfway through, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is all we're going to get of Miseria this season. So, you know, I'm curious about that.
I actually went on the IMDb page of Hot D and... Maggie Q will make an appearance.
You're shitting me. What?
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
I know.
That's cool.
I'm excited too.
Wow, that's cool.
All right. Well, we'll leave you with that. And just want to wish our listeners happy Hispanic Heritage Month.
Happy Hispanic Heritage Month.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
We want to know, are you watching House of the Dragon? Is this something you like us talking about? And if you are watching, what questions do you have about, how we feel about the show? Or do you think we're reading things right? We want to hear from you about that, too. So we can keep talking about it if you like it. Or if there's anything else you're watching, let us know. And we can talk about that, too.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's it from me and Lon. And be nice to one another. And
take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.